Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
An Erios Original.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we're discussing the Jonestown Cult Massacre. Here's what you need to know. As a young white boy growing up in rural Indiana in the 1930s, Jim Jones became fascinated with Pentecostal ministers and Black Baptist churches. By the 1950s, Jones began ministering to his own congregation, fervently promoting socialism, racial equality, and desegregation during a time when social injustices dominated American society. He named the church the People's Temple Full Gospel Church, preaching socialist ideals and performing healings to his growing interracial congregation. The People's Temple offered rent assistance, job placement services, free canned goods, clothing, and an average of 2,800 hot meals per month to those in need. In search of Eden, Jim Jones and 140 of his most loyal church members moved to California in 1965. By the 1970s, his anti-capitalist, anti-war, and anti-segregation messages had amassed thousands of congregants in San Fernando, Los Angeles, and San Francisco, where he had relocated the People's Temple headquarters. Because of their growing numbers, Jim Jones and his church gained attention from local and state political figures. Behind the scenes, however, Jones became increasingly extreme with his followers, using blackmail, physical abuse, and emotional manipulation to control and alienate the members. In 1974, Jones leased more than 3,800 acres of isolated jungle in Guyana in hopes of creating a utopia for the People's Temple. By 1978, nearly 1,000 of his followers had moved to the site and set up a compound known as Jonestown. Jonestown was a two-day boat ride from civilization, and all money and passports were confiscated upon entering. Once you arrived, it was almost impossible to leave. When the San Francisco media began probing Jim Jones and his church in the summer of 1977, he moved hundreds of his followers to Jonestown, promising a sanctuary from outside scrutiny. the conditions were far from the socialist paradise members imagined. It was overcrowded with not enough food or shelter. Children were reportedly separated from their parents. Medical problems ran rampant throughout the community, and armed guards patrolled the area day and night. Jim preached regularly about a revolutionary mass suicide, even leading his followers in rehearsal suicides. As concerned relatives and defectors of Jonestown began rallying the U.S. government and activists to investigate and stop Jonestown, Jim Jones prepared for outside attacks and urged his followers to write to foreign governments in hopes of finding a new home for their community. On November 14, 1978, Congressman Leo Ryan and a delegation arrived at Jonestown to investigate. After a night of dinner and musical performances, the truth began to come out. Members wanted to leave, and Jim Jones was highly agitated. The next morning, Congressman Ryan, members of the delegation, and a group of defectors boarded two planes to leave when a tractor trailer with Jones's security guards drove to the airstrip and opened fire. Five people were gunned down. After the airstrip shooting, Jim Jones called his members to the pavilion, insisting that it was time for their lives to end. He said, quote, "The congressman is dead. Many of our traitors are dead. They're all laying out there dead. Do you think they're going to allow us to get by with this? There's no way, no way we can survive. It's not worth living like this." Jim Jones's most trusted followers mixed and distributed a concoction of Flavor-Aide and cyanide. Over 300 children were made to drink the substance. Members who didn't agree with the, quote, "revolutionary suicide" were injected with poison. And those who attempted to escape into the jungle were shot by armed guards. What many believed to be a future utopia, Jonestown became the site of the largest incident of intentional death in American history pre-9/11. Fun facts, aka death stats. 918 people died on November 18, 1978 in the Jonestown massacre. Five died in the Port Katuma airstrip shootings. They were Congressman Leo Ryan, photographer Greg Robinson of the San Francisco Examiner, cameraman Bob Brown and reporter Don Harris from NBC, and Temple defector Patricia Parks. Four people died at the People's Temple House in Georgetown, Guyana. They were Sharon Amos, one of Jim Jones's closest followers, and her children, Leanne Harris, Krista Amos, and Martin Amos. Later that day, 907 men, women, and children died after ingesting poison. Jim Jones died of a gunshot wound. Most believe it was self-inflicted, while others believe it could have been a homicide. 70% of the people who died in Jonestown were African American. It wasn't actual Kool-Aid that they used in the suicides, but rather a similar brand called Flavor-Aide. The reference to Kool-Aid could be traced to the early reporting in the days after the tragedy.
With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
Fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
And friend and filmmaker Lance Edmonds. Hi, Lance.
Hello.
Lance has a new documentary coming out. It's going to be out on ESPN's 30 for 30 called Deerfoot of the Diamond. Lance, can you tell our listeners a little bit about it?
Absolutely. It's a documentary that's about Louis Sokolexis, who is the first Native American to play Major League Baseball. And he played for the Cleveland team. They were called the Spiders at the time, but then they renamed themselves the Indians, supposedly in his honor. But in fact, the truth is much more complicated, as he faced a lot of racism and a lot of difficult things in his very short career, which ended rather tragically. And the film follows that story, which takes place in the year of 1897, and kind of intercuts it with the modern story of the Cleveland team, which has recently renamed itself the Guardians, due to social justice movements around Native Americans and using the Chief Wahoo mascot. And the film kind of cuts back and forth through time and follows his you know, phenomenal rookie season in 1897 and talks about the name change in 2021. So it's kind of a collage-y documentary about history and baseball. And he was a Penobscot Indian from Maine, which is where I grew up. And
that's right.
I love baseball. I love Maine. And the two kind of greatest influences of my life came together in this movie. And yeah, it's hopefully going to be great.
Lance, this feels, I'm so excited for it because it's my favorite kind of sports movie, the one that makes it about not sports.
Yeah, exactly. There's some sports in it, but it is not, it, you know, it's a movie that I think anyone could appreciate, whether you know anything about baseball, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
We're not talking about stats and, you know,
gather around. The gather around. This is going to be a new, this is going to be an upcoming episode too.
Rebecca also has this amazing uncanny ability to, whenever sports are being played around her, she gets hit with the ball. I've seen it happen like 90 times. I kid you not.
No wonder why you don't like sports.
It's often me who hits her with the ball. So first preferred position is to be away from sports. Second,
for my
you don't want to watch it.
Lance, we like to start off the show by asking our guests, what is something that is recently alarming you? What is something that's keeping you up at night?
Oh, God. I mean, it's 2022. It's like, what's not to, you know, I mean, there's a World War III is happening. There's a raging pandemic. You know, I think existential worry about the end of human civilization. I would have to go with that.
just a light little anxiety. Yeah. To live with daily.
And honestly, that's literally the perfect transition into this massive topic we're going to try and cover. I mean, just so much to uncover here and discuss, and such a tragic event. And first, I want to start off by talking about how, you know, for years this has been said to have been a suicide, right? But there are many people who disagree and say that it was actually a mass murder on Jones's part. Here's from a Rolling Stone article. While the general view of what happened was a mass suicide because people lined up to take the poison drink, there have been arguments from witnesses and former Temple members that it was really mass murder. Long before the actual event, Jones had his followers drink what they initially believed was poison as a test of loyalty to him, which in hindsight was a rehearsal for what would happen later. When Jones implemented the actual suicide plan in Jonestown, there were armed guards with guns and crossbows to ensure that nobody was getting out alive. Okay, that doesn't feel like it was voluntary. Some victims were found to have marks on their body, suggesting they were injected with the poison. Adding to the mass murder argument is that numerous young children died in Jonestown who couldn't possibly know what they were doing. Right. And one of the things that they've said as well is that they gave the order to kill the children first, sealing everyone's face.
Right.
Fate. So Tim Carter, who lost his wife and baby son in Jonestown, also concurs that it was mass murder. Jones was going to kill everybody no matter what. There were so many lies that Jones had told people to create a state of siege mentality in the community that even those that were making a principled stand of revolutionary suicide probably were influenced a lot by the lies that he was telling them. So just wanted to clear that up because I feel like that is a new way of discussing.
When did that take hold, I wonder, that it was a suicide and not a sort of a mass murder? And I know that there's still sort of, because then you start to get into, I mean, how many of the group bought into it? Maybe there were some people, and I listened to the tapes, it's like really disturbing, but you know, there were some people who were sort of followers, I guess, brainwashed by this guy Jones and drank, you know, actually voluntarily drank the Flavor-Aid it was.
Yes, not Kool-Aid.
Not Kool-Aid.
Another.
Poor Kool-Aid.
Well, that was kind of the most interesting part of the tape, I thought, Chris, is there's a woman, I think her name was Christina Miller, if I'm getting that right. You can hear her on the tape kind of making this argument to you know, she says, and I wrote this quote down, as long as there's life, there's hope. And he's basically saying, if we can't live in peace, let's die in peace. He keeps saying that. So there's this actually this conversation that happens between her and him, and he's kind of letting his followers come up and like speak. You know, he's not silencing anyone, but he's letting them say what they think about what's happening. And she basically gets, you know, shouted down more or less, you know, from her position, which is that like, this is wrong, we shouldn't do this. And it's actually kind of fascinating to see that groupthink happening and that kind of like manipulation happening in real time as she kind of says that this is wrong and everyone kind of pushes back. So it's like pretty disturbing. Yeah,
it is. And I also found their conversation was sort of centered around this weird warped Jim Jones like logic where he sort of presented the only opportunity for them to leave is to go to Russia or something like that.
Can you just help our listeners understand what the Jim Jones tapes are?
Oh, yeah. So the Jim Jones, I guess they're just the tapes of, I guess they started recording as they were administering the Flavor Aid.
Mm-hmm.
And he was sort of preaching in front of a group of people, continuing to sort of convince them to go along with this plan.
Got to be disturbing. I actually haven't listened to those.
Oh, God.
You can find it on YouTube. It's like 45 minutes, and it's one of the most horrifying and disturbing cultural artifacts that exists, probably.
Wow.
You know, there's children screaming in the background. One of the most haunting things about the tape is that they had a band and they frequently kind of recorded music. And I think this tape was like recorded over one of the band's rehearsals or something. So in the background, you can hear this very like slow and creepy chorus of kind of gospel music that's just like barely audible happening throughout the whole tape. It's just... It'll give you nightmares. It's pretty awful.
But that was Christine Miller.
Okay.
That was her
name.
So
let's start off by putting Jim Jones.
Yeah, I think we can do that.
Up on the board.
Occasionally there comes an alarmist episode where, you know, who's to blame kind of feels right out the gate.
Sure.
But you know what? We need to go through the podcast anyway. Give our listeners something to do.
Let's dive in. And
but Jim Jones definitely deserves to be on the board at least.
So Jim Jones, this is according to Rolling Stone, as Tim Reiterman explained in Raven, Jones' dark qualities, his need to control people, his deceit and his anger towards people who betrayed or abandoned him could be traced to his childhood in Indiana. A loner during his youth, Jim would entertain his playmates in the loft of his family's barn and made them his captive audience. One time he even locked up his young friends in the barn. He performed experiments on animals and conducted funerals for them. According to Jeff Gwynn's book, The Road to Jonestown, Jones also had an early fascination with Adolf Hitler. When Hitler committed suicide in April 1945, thwarting enemies who sought to capture and humiliate him, Jimmy was impressed, he wrote.
Jeez.
ABC News said, he was a predator who really mastered the art of luring people from every segment of life, said former People's Temple member Yolanda Williams. He started to alienate you from your families, destroy the family unit, she continued, so that then he could become the predator, but also the one who was the provider for every need that you required in life. Some former members said he would also practice fake suicide in small group. Dying for the cause was something some former members said Jones brought up regularly. He even showed us this movie about Jewish concentration camps called Night and Fog, Williams said. He said, this is what they have planned for people of color. We've got to build your land up over there in Jonestown. We've got to get everyone over there. We've got to move fast. We've got to move swiftly. We've got to pool our resources together. He took advantage of the poor, essentially, and the marginalized. And he just filled them with fear and controlled them with lies.
Mm-hmm. Well, the ultimate control move was, and the equivalent of him locking his friends in a garage while he told them stories, which is weird way to entertain people, is the Guyana plot of land, which was so far removed from civilization. He could basically control all the information that came in and out of there.
Yeah. As we were just refreshing the, you know, research on Jonestown, Clayton kept referring to Guyana's isolation. The compound in Guyana is just being a nightmare.
Yeah. Sounds like no basic services. And I mean, you're just going to go over there and build your paradise? Like, what? I can imagine, like, could you even do that today? Could be at least 3,800 acres of land somewhere and just, like, start a compound?
I think that's what Joshua Tree is.
Oh.
That's what people are doing.
The desert.
In Joshua Tree.
I haven't been in a while.
Yeah, I think just the isolation. I mean, I think about, like, what I used to do as a child, and it was just like, you know, like, we're going to do plays. I guess that was a form of forcing the kids around the block to, like...
You're saying you
I'm just wondering.
Them?
I'm just wondering if I've
forced musicals on your friends.
Is that the same? I hope not.
I think we've all wanted to run a cult at one time or another. Am I wrong?
Well, listen, Rebecca. Now you have an audience. You have a podcast called The Alarmist where people tune in and listen to you weekly. So maybe you are a cult leader.
I hope I'm helping people think for themselves. Not think like I think.
Yeah. The other thing he would do is, and we can put this up on the board, was he sort of, I think he was atheist, but he used sort of religiosity, you know, sure. His own kind of religion as like a way to attract people to his vision, which was more like, I think...
Yeah, we'll talk
socialist.
About that, how
okay.
He used that.
Okay.
But I
what
also...
do you want to term that? Religiosity? Is that
I
the
don't
term?
Know.
I was going to call it the theater of church, but we can discuss...
I like that term.
Okay. Because
I love theater.
That's right. But I just want to... another thing about Jones is that when he started off, and we'll get to this as well later, you know, it felt like his idea... It felt like he really did want to help you know, people,
yeah.
especially members of the Black community in Indiana, you know, but clearly he was a narcissist,
right.
You know, like many cult leaders are. He really falls into this stereotype of a cult leader.
For sure.
Again, he was also known to like coerce female followers into sexual relationships.
Yeah.
He also, which is like classic cult leader stuff, but he also coerced his male followers as well. So that's something that's lesser known about him as well.
I mean, and we can get into this, but there is something to this sort of way he sort of used what are on the face of them sort of these altruistic, egalitarian kind of I guess you'd call them like selling points to join. You know, it's like, oh, we're all equal here in this community.
Right. Noble cause.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, of course, like those are values. I mean, I think the best of us share or whatever. But at the same point, at the end of the day, he didn't know. I think, yeah, once you have all that power, I mean, I, at some point, maybe it crossed over for him where he just didn't know what to do with all these people, and then he got paranoid, and I don't know, that sort of internal journey of where he started to where he went from, maybe there's some way we can term that
Jones's internal journey.
Yeah, it's almost like, I don't know.
But do you know what I'm saying?
Like, well, yeah, I do, but I wonder, you know, the question is, was he always intending to do this, or was this something that evolved over time?
Right, right.
I think that some of the stories about him as a child to me certainly give me pause. In one documentary, it talks about how he had killed a cat with a knife as a boy. You know, there were certainly sociopathic tendencies inside of him from the beginning. He suffered a lot of abuse from his own parents. I think that even in the beginning, while it had this egalitarian vibe to it, I think that darkness was always inside him from the very beginning. And it just took time and isolation and stress to kind of bring that to the foreground.
Yes, I would absolutely agree. I read something here on salon.com In reality, Jones maintained a racial hierarchy within the organization. While church membership was primarily black, the 37-member planning commission, as Jones called his leadership council, was dominated by white women, at least six of whom were his sexual conquests and firmly under his sway. Oof. When people talk about my father manipulating black people, that's true, said Jim Jones Jr., the preacher's black adopted son. It was politically advantageous for him to give me his name.
Wow. Okay, so that's just a read we can, that's a judgment call you can kind of collect information and make, right, on him, which is like he was using sort of egalitarian ideals as a smokescreen, basically, right?
Mm. Oh, maybe that's something, Chris, like the smoke screen, the egalitarian good, smoke screen.
The good guy facade.
Yeah, let's put that.
The good guy mask.
The good guy mask. And I think this goes into theater of church, which, you know, yeah, let's
kinda
discuss. Yeah,
kind of could rolled up into that, but yeah, let's get into that.
Let's put that up on the board. This is kind of long, so please bear with me. IndyStar.com, after being affiliated with several different Indianapolis churches, Jones started his own congregation in 1955. Jones named his new church the People's Temple. In those early years of his ministry, Jones seemed to truly walk the walk. He set up a soup kitchen that fed hundreds every day. He organized an employment assistance service in which church members helped the jobless find work and gave them decent clothes to wear to job interviews. Jones and his wife, Marceline, adopted 8 children of all races. The healing of America's divide between blacks and whites was always at the core of Jones's message, and the People's Temple reflected that diversity in its congregation, a rarity that then and even 30 years later. As the People's Temple grew, Jones' preaching style became more fanatical, more based on his own words than biblical scriptures. Some members began to leave the church while others became more fervently devoted to Jones. Like other Pentecostal preachers, Jones sometimes performed faith healings. At first, these were of the sort where a person's strength of faith could make him feel stronger and less burdened by pain. After a while, however, Jones allegedly started pulling cancerous tumors out of people's mouths in front of the congregation. One former temple member later told the Star that the tumors were chicken livers Jones palmed like a magician who seemed to pull a coin out of a child's ear. Whatever may have been in Jones' heart at the beginning of his ministry had been replaced by something that he knew was a lie. So pulling chicken livers.
This guy is how do people get this way? Like, how does that happen?
There's a scene in the documentary too where he fake heals a woman in a wheelchair who turns out to just be his secretary who's pretending to be, and she stands up and runs around and everyone's clapping, but yeah, it's all a ruse. It seems rather obvious. You'd think that people would catch on to some of these things, but I think there must have been a willful ignorance on a part of some of the congregation, at least, to kind of go along with this in some way. There is obviously some sense of collective delusion that's
right. There's like a hopeful, there must be something going on too. Like the time must have been, it's so hectic that you're willing to believe a miracle like that because it's better than the reality that you're currently living. I mean,
we can blame the 70s.
Yes.
Sure.
Put the 70s up on the board.
The tumultuous 1960s and 70s.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, culture was just, it was just upside down, guys. It was just going crazy. People had long hair. It was nuts. Nobody wore hats anymore.
End of the hat, I think, had a lot to do with this.
The end of the hat.
Could we call it the end of the hat?
I think you're right. I think that I can only imagine how confusing it might have been for people who are part of the congregation, because on the one hand, he was definitely trying to help these people in his community. I mean, he would really stand up. There was a point where he would stand up for businesses that wouldn't allow black people to eat in their restaurants. And then he'd show up and there would be a big protest and, you know, think he was actually like starting change. But on the other hand, like he was doing these crazy things in his congregation. Mm. And so I'm sure that it must have been somewhat confusing. I read that there was that one time where he had, okay, so there was a meeting of his top like members of the congregation and mm-hmm. he had served them wine. Mm. And then he said, he told the people that the wine was poisoned. And a few people that were at the meeting started fake dying.
Okay.
And the people around, the ones that were like, I'm not sure, they didn't know what to do. And then Jim Jones said, well, actually, if you try and run, then this is a test. So if you try and run and get help, you're going to get shot. But if you stay, you will be healed or something. If you just sit through it, you'll be healed. And someone tried to get up and leave and then they were shot. And then it was just it all ended up being a lie. The wine wasn't right. poisoned. But this is the kind of Guyana? Mind game. No, this was right. not. In Whoa. This was way before. So he's been doing it for a while.
What point as a follower of this do you start to, when things like this are happening?
I think when you feel that bullet enter your back, you're like, ooh, well, maybe I shouldn't.
Yeah, I made
have.
A mistake.
This is some cost fallacy. You know, you're with them for years. You've sold all of your property. You've given up all your right. worldly possessions. And what choice do you have? You can't admit to yourself that you've made a mistake, right? I mean, that's part of the insidiousness of this whole thing. It's he knows that too on some level. The right. more you give up, the more you realize that you have to continue this lie yourself because, right. You become complicit in your own bondage in a way.
Yeah.
What did you call that, Lance? The something fallacy?
Oh, the sunk cost fallacy.
Sunk cost.
Sunk cost fallacy. I love
let's
that.
Put that up on the board.
Yeah. And let's put the 1960s and 70s up on the board because I think to your point, Chris, that these were tumultuous times. This is according to ABC News. Jim Jones rose to prominence in the 50s. He promoted social justice, racial and class equality, and desegregation. But some of his former followers said he paid lip service to those ideas to lure people in. You got to remember, this all started back in the 60s and 70s. Our society was in turmoil. There was constant aggression going on. You had riots going on, said former people's temple member Tom Bogue. And then you have Jim Jones saying, "Do I have a place for you, for us?"
Yeah, and this rings really true when you start to hear how he controlled information at Jonestown, and he would talk about how in America, he would just basically make up this horror show that was going on back at the States where KKK was guarding the borders and shit like that, where he would just say racism is rampant and the government is horrible. And so anyway, he sort of used the tumultuous 60s and 70s as a way to kind of, I guess, sort of continue to sell the deterioration of America to the people he had on his compound.
Yeah. Even on the tape, you can hear him say, if we don't feed these children poison, they're going to parachute in and torture all of them, basically, right. making up these crazy alternative stories that are, leaving people no choice, but obviously that wasn't going to be the case. Do you guys feel like he bought his own bullshit? Do you think he believed what he was saying, or do you think he knew that these were lies that he was using to manipulate people? Because that's something I always wonder about with these kind of cult leaders, whether they're high on their own supply or whether they know on some level that this is what they need to say in order to have their flock, so to speak.
I think it's an interesting question because it's do we blame, because it's either you're blaming some kind of delusion or hysteria, or you're blaming his need to hold power. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, he definitely had an active imagination from the beginning, right? Because all of these things that he invented in his head, like you were saying, Lance, that he would say that they were coming out to get him, they were real. They would reenact them. What would you say? Pretend it was happening. It was a rehearsal, essentially. So I wonder how much of that was this like some kind of paranoia that was,
you know, what's crazy is it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy in a certain way, because think about Koresh or something, think about Waco, you know, he's telling all these people, we have to stockpile all these weapons because the government is going to come and attack us and try and kill us. And of course, the very stockpiling is what causes the government to start looking into it, and then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way. So it's similar in a way, right? I mean, like, there's this kind of crazy feedback loop that happens where the paranoia and the apocalyptic visions sort of come true by their very kind of the nature of them just conjuring them up themselves. It's, you know.
And from what I read, he was like a big doomsday believer. He was obsessed with nuclear war. And so he was the reason he even went to South America was, I think he wanted to go to Brazil because he had read somewhere that was a place, one of the places where you're most likely to survive if the Cold War turns hot.
Oh, right.
You know?
That was a big pitch for it.
So that kind of mentality, that paranoia of the time.
Yeah, that's consistent with the paranoia.
Right.
And the paranoia, I guess, to me, that makes it more real for him. That's to me less manipulation. And in those tapes, like, I guess if it, you know, there's probably obviously some sort of middle space where it's not all manipulation all sort of believing it. There's some kind of, I'm sure he has some kind of sense that if he were to give up or admit to some of his lies, that would sort of be a crack that sort of people could use to justify sort of leaving or breaking down his whole reality. But I do think that the manipulation, listening to him speak, you know, I think he's buying a lot of this stuff. Like the cold, I think he had fear of this Cold War sort of. I mean, the fear of the Cold War was real. I mean, a lot of people were worried about the Cold War. People were building bunkers. I mean, they were having drills in classrooms.
I mean, people are still doing that. You know?
Yeah, right. So, it's probably somewhere in the middle, but you got to think he bought it. It's, you know, to a degree.
I think you have to put just human nature up on the board. Because, I mean, I think that this is still going on, maybe not to the extreme degree that is Jim Jones, but there, you know, we've seen the Keith Raniere stuff. I don't know if you watched The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, but you see, you know, Mary Cosby is very much a Jim Jones type character.
Wow, I got to tune in. I have not watched a single episode, nor did I even know that show existed.
I highly, highly recommend it.
Wow.
But you basically see, you know, someone who's a religious kind of cult leader in the making in it as one of the characters. And I think that this is just a pattern that seems to repeat itself over and over and over and over and over again. Right. So on a certain level, there's something in human beings that creates this social dynamic and replicates it in different forms throughout history. So, you know, it feels like in a way it's always going to be there, you know?
Jeez.
Well, it's like
bleak.
As long as
that's bleak. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks.
Well, thanks for coming on our comedy podcast.
I keep forgetting to be funny, I guess. I don't know.
No.
You're doing a great job, Lance.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Clayton?
I mean, I think Lance just is making a great point. It's like, there's something about, you know, taking advantage of humans, like fear of the unknown. You know, it's like, of course, that's why it'll repeat itself, because people are always looking for some kind of answer. And then when someone has like the confidence, you know, like, I feel like we've talked about this in previous episodes where some people just exude that kind of like confidence and know-how that everybody else is too, doesn't have. So you're just like, oh my God, I will follow this person because they must know something that I don't.
Put charisma up on the board.
Sure.
I mean, is that what you're talking about,
Lance? Yeah.
Do you want to get into that? Or Clayton, is that what you're kind of talking about?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just kind of like riffing on this idea of, you know, human nature and this repeating itself. Like, what is that thing? Like, what is the insecurity that we possess.
I don't know. It feels
allows
to
us
me
to
like
be taken advantage of. Like we allow ourselves to be taken advantage of all the time.
Well, and on the flip side, it also feels like a dominance thing. It's like, why are human beings wanting to like dominate other people and like have them be in their little club and be the leader? And it's just.
Yeah. Couldn't Jim Jones just have expressed these values through like a family? Just like having a family.
I mean, I guess
that's
also
ideals.
A nightmare. I don't know if he should be having a family, honestly.
He had a family.
He did.
He killed them all.
Yeah. It's
God. Sorry.
I think it's just, but, you know, we're lonely, empty vessels searching for truth and meaning. I think that there's just that need within everybody, and we find it in different ways. I think if you can't find a healthy outlet for it, join a cult, you know, because all that stuff is right there, right? I mean, you just are handed a script of what to believe in and how to believe in it. You're given immediate friends, you're given structure. I mean, you know, it might as well be the military. It might as well be any other kind of large scale group where you're given the instructions on how to live life and what to believe. And I think we just need that.
We are searching for that. Yeah.
Without it, you're sort of lost, people
will
right?
always take advantage. It's an easy place for people to take advantage of others. Because you're servicing those in need and they'll do anything to feel better. So there you go. I know that we're running out of time, so I just want to put up another thing on the board. Publicity without intervention. This is according to Julia Shears, 1,000 Lives, The Untold Story of Jonestown, describing the early days at Jonestown. They relaxed together at supper time when the settlers gathered to eat family-style dinners of fried chicken or fish with local greens. Cans of Pepsi were shipped up to from Georgetown, and the kitchen handed out peanut butter fudge for treats. Afterward, they play board games or watch movies in the large open pavilion at the settlement center. Some nights with the youth would find a boombox and dance as the voice of Diana Ross wailed in the jungle. It was July 1976. America was celebrating its bicentennial. Jonestown was birthing a new society. Then it all changed. New West magazine was about to publish an expose portraying Jim Jones, by now a celebrated California power broker, as a charlatan who faked healings, swindled money from his followers, and fathered a son with an attractive acolyte. It was all true. Until then, Jones had only visited the mission sporadically, but now he moved in permanently, occupying a secluded cottage on the outskirts of Jonestown with two concubines while his wife took up residence nearby. Then he started to evacuate his flock from San Francisco before the scandal went public. By the fall of 1977, there'd been 700 people shoehorned into Jonestown, five times more than the compound could feed. During an interview with NBC correspondent Don Harris, asked Jones about the allegations of mistreatment and imprisonment. Jones denied everything. Harris showed him a note that a resident had slipped him the previous day, which said, "Help us get out of Jonestown." So he knew it was coming to an end. Mm-hmm. He knew people were getting on, were leaving, right? Apparently there had been a mole. It was one of the people that had said they were going to leave, right?
Right.
Mm. And that's how some of the people were shot. He had a gun.
Yeah.
Other people then from the compound showed up and started shooting at the planes. The people who were about to leave. Obviously, many people died. Once that happened, it was like the beginning of the end.
Right.
Right. Show's over.
But what was happening before that, which was this publicity, he knew things were coming out, that were going to be coming out in the media. And he was no stranger to the media because he was very well known. He wasn't one of these cult leaders where you find out, you know, who become famous after the fact, right? He was pretty famous while he was doing it. And well known in these like political circles in San Francisco as well, which we haven't even touched on. But like he was well known, and it just feels like
He saw the storm coming, the storm of bad publicity. He knew he was at a critical moment. Then that's when he started to become unhinged, right? And it was reported that he did a lot of drugs. It was reported that he was acting really erratic, afraid. The paranoia grew, et cetera, et cetera. So he kind of saw the storm coming. Paradise Lost, I would recommend if you want to see. They had a really good depiction of how it all kind of unfolded. And they did it all in these reenactments that are really, really good reenactments. I would recommend that. And you can kind of get into, I guess, a little bit on the blame board, like how it unfolded. Mm-hmm. And I guess you can kind of blame the guy who passed a note, or you can blame the mole
who went on the plane. Right? I have a hard time.
Like you get into the minutiae a little bit, but it doesn't feel right.
It's bigger than that. Who knows what someone would do if they were in those circumstances, you know? And how could they have known that there was a mole?
Yeah, it just seemed like such crazy, wild, like chaotic moment, and that I don't know that any one person could be to blame it besides Jim Jones. I mean, I don't want to jump to the
ending. How does it work legally? Like, I'm curious, like, you know, for Charles Manson, I believe, was convicted for the murders at the Tate House, where he wasn't even there. Right.
And
I do believe he was, we may need to check the historical record on this, but I do believe he was charged in some way with those murders being responsible for them, even though he wasn't even on the premises.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, he had killed other people, but not in that particular case. And so I wonder, you know, legally how people go about assigning blame to these kind of situations where it is not done by their hand, but rather done by their coaxing, and the way that you assign blame for the people who did the physical act versus, you know, put the act in motion. It's a fascinating kind of conversation about culpability and where that falls.
We can probably punt that to an expert if we have this. No, I'm serious though.
Who's
like, I'd
the
be
legal
curious
expert on that you bring up, you know.
I don't know.
Yeah, find someone.
I feel like if we don't have anything else we want to put up on the board, we'll come up with our own conclusions that will not probably be right, but we'll try our best.
Okay. But is there anything else we want to throw up on the board?
By the way, is there a physical board?
Yeah, you'll see it in a second.
I'll share it with you.
Really satisfying, because that's the only thing I wanted to do is see the board.
So let's just take a quick break and then we'll start knocking things off the board.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Okay, who's to blame for the Jonestown cult massacre? Is it Jim Jones, the theater of the church, the good guy mask, the tumultuous 1960s and 70s, aka the end of the hat, the sunk cost fallacy, doomsday paranoia, human nature, or publicity without intervention? You know, I just want to throw in there too is control of information.
Okay, yeah.
Control of information. I mean, I think the fact that he was able to isolate everybody and it makes you think of Putin and all of the Russian citizens who have a completely different understanding of what's happening in Ukraine than the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, and isolation, all like cult, you know, tools, like cult leader tools. It's like the, you know, families that he isolated them from families. He took away their passports once they got there.
Control.
That's all control. Yeah. So really good board. Smaller.
It's a short board. It's a small board, but they're all like pretty, they're pretty dense.
Uh-huh. Hard to knock. It's hard to like think of where to start. Knocking things up. I guess what we could do is fold things into each other. Like
I'll tell you what. I would go ahead and knock up the tumultuous 1960s and 70s because, let's be honest, there were some amazing things that came out in the 1960s and 70s. It wasn't all horrible tragedy.
It's true. That's true.
There was a lot of amazing music, a lot of amazing art, a lot of amazing films. It was a tumultuous time, but I think it was a time that as a society, we grew and understood each other in a deeper way. So I'm not going to say that that's the blame.
Yeah.
Tie-dye shirts.
One of them.
Thank God.
Great thing.
Bell bottoms.
I was thinking the good guy mask could go into Jim Jones.
Yeah,
sure.
I think so. And you can also throw Theater of the Church in there, too. I mean, this he was the guy who kind of...
Well, he definitely used the Theater of the Church to his advantage, so I don't know.
But a lot of people...
Oh, I see what you're saying, like, which is bigger.
Can use that.
Yeah, which is the more sort of...
The sunk cost fallacy, it feels a little bit more victim-blamey, too.
Yeah, that right? does feel a bit victim-blamey.
So maybe we take that off for this one. Doomsday paranoia. That definitely contributed.
Mm-hmm.
Human nature. Are we going to send human nature to the alarmist jail?
Listen, I feel like more and more recently, humans have been proving that we're pretty a terrible species.
That's right.
I think there is some space for human nature in the alarmist jail.
Human nature is sort of the umbrella under which everything else falls.
It's true. Once you go there, it's hard to go back. But I will say, of all of our episodes we've done on the alarmist, we've never blamed a different species.
Mm-hmm. No.
We've never been like...
Yet.
Not yet.
We've never been like...
I wouldn't put it past
the humble anteater is to blame in this case.
Hey, you could blame termites for like a collapse of a house.
That's true.
That killed a bunch of people.
Well,
so.
We should do the movie Arachnophobia, and then we can maybe blame the spiders.
Great.
Finally, get those in the jail.
Or Lake Placid and blame the alligator.
Nobody wants spiders in the jail. That doesn't sound fun.
We didn't blame the dinosaurs for Jurassic Park,
No, we didn't. No, we blamed.
Really? You didn't blame the dinosaurs?
No, because John, what's his name? He brought him back into existence.
Yeah, but without the dinosaurs, there is no death.
Well, you should have been there, Lance. You should have been there.
Sorry, next time.
Human nature. Okay, publicity without intervention. That's a tough one because it really amped up. It made it worse for the members, really, because it amped up Jim Jones's paranoia.
I guess my question with that is like, are we saying that if there wasn't that like incoming publicity that was going to expose him, that maybe this would have been averted? Or because it seems to me like even without that was a, like the catalyst that kind of made the thing happen. But he's been practicing the suicide stuff all along.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like it could have been punted, I guess. It maybe wouldn't have happened then. I don't know. That one is tough for me to wrap my mind around. It feels like a lot of speculation.
I got to be honest here. I'm going to just say something bold. I think maybe for the first time in Alarmist history, we should both blame and slap Jim Jones. So, because wow. If you think about it, you go through all these other options, Theater of the Church, Doomsday Paranoia, Human Nature, Publicity Without Intervention, Control the Information. You can either draw that back to Jim Jones as being sort of the one who manifested all that those things or harnessed those things to his advantage. And just at the end of the day, you know, oh God, he was so central to this whole to this whole operation.
It is true.
What is the test that you typically apply? Do you say, if we were to remove this thing, would this event have happened? Obviously, there are many contributing factors, but without Jim Jones, there is no Jonestown.
No.
Right. No, there you go.
Yeah.
We've
this
never.
This is one of them where all roads lead to Jonestown.
it's.
Which is ironic because there were no roads that
one
went
of the worst
of
musicals all boats. I've ever seen.
Yeah. So, I mean, we could just short circuit this thing unless you want to give a long look to, I don't know, Human Nature.
I was thinking what I was thinking I was going to do was send Jim Jones to jail and slap Human Nature.
Mm.
That was
Lance did make a compelling point about how this is just not going to stop.
Yeah. I think we need to be aware of our own human nature.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you guys are on board, I feel like I'm going to call it. Human Nature, you're getting the big slap. Jim Jones, you're going to the Alarmist jail. And there you have it.
I wanted to add just one little addendum at the end. Not addendum, just a quote. Because it was something Lance was saying earlier when he was talking about cults and how people just need sense of community. Made me think of a Kurt Vonnegut quote, which I'll just read right here. What should young people do with their lives today? Many things, obviously. But the most daring thing is to create stable communities in which the terrible disease of loneliness can be cured.
Mm.
Pretty good one from Kurt, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the operative words there, I think, are stable community, because this was absolutely not a stable community, right? I mean, that is the trick to it all, is to find meaning, find that cure for loneliness, but do it in such a way where you're not causing harm, right?
Well, and if you think about the bigger picture, the even bigger unstable community is our country as a whole, right? The state of our country. Whereas, like, what if these people... You know, what if these people did have stable housing? What if there was social justice in our society? Maybe they wouldn't be searching for, you know, maybe they couldn't have been taken advantage.
Sure. And it's on us to create stable communities. And the most stable community of all, I believe, is the Alarmy, the listeners of this podcast. You are
amen, brother.
Oh no.
The online podcast community of the Alarmy.
Lance, thank you so much for joining us today and helping us get to the bottom of who's to blame for the Jonestown cult massacre.
Yeah, I mean, it was quite a journey, but I think it sort of starts and ends with the big man at top. But yeah, I mean, but we didn't discuss the possibility of Will Smith being partly to blame for all this.
That's for another episode.
Yeah.
We'll bring you back.
Are you
back.
Guys going to do that one? Can I come on that one?
You can, and it's
we're going to wait 20 years, but yes.
Yeah. We need to see how the aftermath of that.
We need to let the dust settle a little bit on
years,
that
it's
one.
It's too hot right now. Too scorching hot.
We're not a topical podcast.
We're
Lance.
Still collecting information on that one.
We're in conversations with the Academy.
after the massacre, Larry Layton, one of Jones's top aides, was arrested and convicted of attempted murder. He was the only person to face criminal charges related to the events at Jonestown. The U.S. military was tasked with evacuating the dead and wounded from Jonestown. By April of 1979, nearly 300 bodies of those followers had been claimed by family members, with hundreds still unclaimed or decomposed past the point of identification. Many relatives couldn't afford the military transport fees, nearly $500, for a family to bring home a loved one for private burial. Today, there is a memorial to the victims of Jonestown in Oakland. About 80 members of People's Temple who were living in Guyana survived the massacre, as well as hundreds of members living in San Francisco and Los Angeles. The survivors still struggle with the enduring trauma of the event. Visit our website and let us know who you think is to blame at www.thealarmistpodcast.com and follow us on Instagram at The Alarmist Podcast and on Twitter at Alarmist The. You can also send us your thoughts via email to thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Today's episode was produced and engineered by Clayton Early, with fact-checking by Chris Smith and editing by Molly Hockey. Additional writing by Anastasia Kousakis. Thank you to our associate producer and researcher, Alex Paul. The Alarmist is executive produced by Rebecca Delgado-Smith and the Erios Network. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing Balloon Fest 86.
Erios.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.